The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight, with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Why are there so many trials and indictments? And why am I greatly reviled? Things all got stormy for just a few minutes while my wife was having our child. That would not seem to be very good optics for Republicans to see. So I tried to hide it, to sway an election. The lawyer, the porn star, and me.
Everybody sing.
I spoke of grabbing things that shouldn't be reached for on that Access Hollywood show. I couldn't have another bimbo eruption to end up on Politico. So Michael Cohen paid her out of pocket and marked it down as legal fees. It sure wasn't worth it for one small erection. The lawyer, the porn star, and me. I'm probably going to jail unless I can win this election. Now, as I'm sitting here for jury selection, I'm struggling to remain awake.
Oh, yeah.
It turns out that staying up to ungodly hours might have been a big mistake. My mind is slowing, no Diet Coke's flowing. A jail cell is all I foresee. So I'll just start planning the next insurrection with MAGA, the Proud Boys, and me. MAGA da dee da da dum, da 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 dee, MAGA doo.
Oh, that's a good one. That is Patrick Fitzgerald. You can find him on the YouTubes with a great rendition of the Rainbow Connection. Just perfect, perfect lyrically. And he's got the Kermit voice down too. I love that. That's how you start a Monday. Now, of course, we do have the fucking news coming up. But the trial began this morning. Apparently, when they got in, there was a problem with one of the jurors. Not a rural juror, but a juror nonetheless. And I think it was juror number nine. But anyway, they went into chambers. They talked through whatever the issue was. And the juror remained on the panel. Now, the thing is, they do have six alternates. My guess is they're going to blow through most of them, if not all of them, during this trial that's set to last 4 to 6 weeks. They left early today. They were going to break at 2 Eastern time because Passover begins tonight. So Happy Passover. There's a saying, it's like a have a zissent Pesach or something like that. I always thought it was decent. Have a decent Pesach. Again, anyway, happy Passover for those who celebrate. So they were going to break it too, but one of the jurors had a dental emergency and had to leave at 12:30. So they broke at 12:30. Now that both sides delivered their opening remarks, and the speculation was that since they had to break at 12:30, it was like noon when the opening remarks were done, and some of the pundits on the TVs were saying, you know, they probably won't call the first witness because, you know, why let him get started just to have to end it and pick it up again tomorrow? But they did. They did call the first witness, even though he was only on the stand for about 10 minutes, apparently. There was enough there to get them started, to give the jurors something to chew on. Little dental humor there, overnight, and they come back tomorrow and do it again, and they will break at 2 tomorrow because it is a second night of Passover, the second Seder night. So they will break at 2 tomorrow. Wednesday, they're dark because they're off on Wednesday, and then they'll be back Thursday. But Thursday is when the Extreme Court, formerly known as the Supreme Court, will hear Trump's ridiculous claim, his case, that claiming that he has something called absolute immunity, something that does not exist. So that's Thursday. This is a busy week. Now, poor Donald, and I say that facetiously because the only thing poor about him is his pocketbook, but I should be that poor, right? I mean, he's not what he claims to be. It's called little dick energy. But, you know, he brags that he's bigger and better and smarter and stronger and richer and everything else, better than everybody else, because he thinks he's better than everybody else. However, we know that he doesn't really have the money that he claims he has. His penthouse apartment is not as large as he says it is. You know, he's just an exaggerator. But apparently the court this morning ruled that this shady financial institution who posted his bond, $175 million or something, that he needed to post in order to be able to appeal the New York civil fraud trial case, that the bank was legit enough. So Donald, once again, caught a pass there. Shouldn't have. I'm going to share with you some of the action from court this morning. Now, here's the thing. It's New York State. These proceedings are not televised. No cameras in the courtroom. But they did release a press release today. The New York City or New York State court put out a press release, and it says, here it is, press center, a court system to post daily transcripts of Trump trial on its website. So I will, it's a weird, funky URL. It's www2, as in number two, www.nycourts.gov/press/index.shtml. I will post that. I'll put it in the chat room. I'll put it on the blog where I post today's show, which will be at NicoleSandler.com/4-22-24. You should know by now the show's not behind a paywall. So each day I post the audio podcast, the video version of the program, a very basic write-up about it, and any links that I tell you I'll post when I remember to do it, I will post that today. So here's the thing. Let me read to you. With opening statements starting today in the historic trial, the people of the state of New York versus Donald J. Trump, Chief Administrative Judge Joseph A. Zayas and First Deputy Chief Administrative Judge Norman St. George announced that trial transcripts will be available to the public on the court system website at the URL I just read to you. The court system is taking the novel step of posting the daily transcripts of the trial proceedings on its public website which falls in line with its landmark innovations to publish online the court's filings and decisions, as well as the case exhibits. That'll be interesting. To ensure broad and continuous public access to this extraordinarily high-profile case. But here's the fine print. A certified transcript of each day's trial proceeding will be posted online and publicly available before the end of the next business day. So it's already going to be like a whole day old. So I was thinking, I was talking to Spocko off the air before the show, that I think we're going to need to, depending on the witness and the testimony, have some days where we do dramatic reenactments. So Spocko says he can do a mean Michael Cohen. I can certainly handle Stormy Daniels and even Karen McDougal. And I would just love the chance to handle malaria. Although somehow I think she's not going to testify. But maybe Ivanka will. Now, I know Laffy is the Ivanka person. Now, Laffy, you know, here's the thing. For people who've been asking, where's Laffy? We announced it at the time. She's in the process of selling her house in California. Anybody need a great house in the Thousand Oaks area? She's selling. Apparently the market has slowed a bit. But they're trying to move up to Canada. So she's kind of busy right now. Plus, she has been live tooting, because that's what you do on Mastodon, tooting the proceedings. So I pulled some of her stuff. I pulled a lot of her her recap of today that I will share with you. But before we get to that, let me share one other thing. So there's a new ad that I guess made its debut this morning on MSNBC. And it's an ad put out by Republicans voting against Trump. Here, I'll give you the morning joke intro to it. So they'll tell you exactly who paid for it. Okay. So let me just bring this up here. This is a pretty stellar ad. Republicans voting against Trump, or I guess is who paid for it. This is how it goes. This is their intro to it. And then the ad.
Going to have to endure the wrath of these policies, the lack of gun policies the overturning of Roe in real time. And then it will ultimately turn back against them. A new ad from the group Republican Voters Against Trump. Focusing on how the former president's legal issues may be a liability for the presidency. Uh-oh. Let's take a listen.
I was wondering if you guys are hiring right now. I was thinking about applying for a job. Yeah. I was thinking about applying for a job here. I'm currently facing idiot felonies. For detention of classified information. If you all take people that have been found liable for sexual assault, trying to overturn the 2020 election, falsifying business records, I was wondering if that was going to be a problem.
Background check.
Yeah.
So that's the only.
So probably not.
Yeah.
So if you guys hire people that sexually assault other people, or
we
want to
phone background.
Okay.
No, we don't.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Donald Trump has been charged with 88 felonies and found liable for sexual assault. If Trump is too big of a liability to get a job at your local mall, he is too big of a liability to be president of the United States.
Uh-oh. All right. Republican Voters Against Trump. So Spocko said you heard an echo on that YouTube clip. Yeah. So I figured out the echo issue that we've been having. It's Windows 11. Windows 11 has this funky thing, and it's good in some respects, where it, I'll even show it to you. It has a volume mixer. So I'll show you what happens, just those of you watching on video, so you can see the sausage being made, so to speak. Here, let me try to pull this up here. Is that it? Oh, that's not going to work. Got it? Now, you know what? I'll show it to you another time because I've got the screen all set up for Jonathan when he comes. But basically what it does is it shows each channel that's coming in, an audio channel, and it will it turns on another audio channel that has access to my sound so that when you know, it has a number of different inputs all, you know, playing audio at the same time, and I have to go in and manually close them. So, sorry, that's what happened. So when you guys, I don't hear it here because I'm not monitoring YouTube. I'm monitoring the audio coming out of my mixing board. And if you listen to the audio-only stream, which, by the way, you can get at progressivevoices.com, you can also get it my audio stream. I do have a tune-in channel, but don't ask me what the address is for it. But you can get it at NicoleSandlerStream.com. And all it is the audio stream, and it is sans echo. So that should be able to help. Anyway, that's that story. And you heard the ad. Okay, let me share with you a little bit of Laffy's live tooting of this morning's proceedings. Now, what she does, she gets on Mastodon. She's at Gotta Laugh at Mastodon, spelled out mastodon.social. Mastodon is weird in that way, in that there's all different instances. Like the one I'm on is mstdn.social. Go figure. So anyway, she was out there tooting at warp speed this morning. So I'm gonna, and she takes them, like her notes came from Katie Fang at NBC, from press is I can't think of the name of it. It'll come to me when I'm not trying to think of it. Adam Klasveld, who else, and a few others. Anna Bauer, people who are in the courtroom. Most of her stuff is Anna Klasveld. So here's a few things. It started when they came in and all that. The first thing the judge did this morning was rule from the bench on the Sandoval hearing. Now, there was a Sandoval hearing happened Friday afternoon. Once they sat the jury, the Sandoval hearing, this is an interesting tidbit, is something that's done for the benefit of the defendant, if the defendant says that they want to testify. And of course, Donald Trump always says he's going to testify and he never does. You know, his lawyers are telling him, do not do that. But sometimes he can't help himself. You know, what he wants to do is be able to just snark and make comments from the defendant's table, which that's a big no-no, can't do that. So he keeps saying he's going to testify. So what the Sandoval hearing does is it informs the defendant of where the questioning, the cross-examination of that person can go legally if he chooses to testify. So if Donald Trump chooses to testify, I'll read now, this is a recap via Katie Fang. If Trump takes the stand, the people can inquire about the following six determinations in four separate proceedings. February 16th, 2024, he violated the law by fraudulently misstating the value of his assets. October 28th, 2022, he failed to remove an untrue, personally identifying post about a law clerk and was fined $5,000. October 21st, 2023, he intentionally violated a court order by continually attacking court clerk, and the fine was $10,000. In Carroll versus Trump, the defendant defamed E. Jean Carroll by making false statements. Carroll versus Trump, again, the defendant made false statements about Carroll with actual malice. The New York Attorney General versus Donald J. Trump Foundation engaged in repeated and willful self-dealing transactions. So all those things can be brought up on cross should he decide to testify, and more. There was more, but there were six main areas. Okay, the next stop, this is Laffy's tweet number 20, or toot, sorry, toot number 20 in a string of, I don't know, a lot. Prosecutor. Okay, so the prosecutor's opening statements. Here are some of his bullet points. The scheme began. The defendant met with David Pecker, with Michael Cohen there. They conspired to conceal negative information about Mr. Trump. Michael Cohen paid $130,000 to Stormy Daniels to silence her. The defendant claimed the payments to Michael Cohen were for legal services.
Bullshit. Where'd that come from? Sorry, that was a lie. Oh, I guess that's where it came from. The defendant falsified 34 business records. He was indicted. Falsified were invoices, voucher entries, and payment checks with check stubs. Her next toot was from Adam Klasfeld, who said, Prosecutor Matthew Colangelo's first line, quote, this is a case about a criminal conspiracy and a cover-up. The purpose of this conspiracy, the prosecutor says, was to influence the 2016 presidential election. So although on the TV and in shorthand, pundits keep referring to this as the hush money trial, paying hush money is not against the law. But a conspiracy, a criminal conspiracy and a cover-up to influence a presidential election, that is a crime. Klasfeld continues, as one part of the agreement, Michael Cohen paid Stormy Daniels $130,000 to, quote, silence her and to make sure the public did not learn about a sexual encounter with a defendant, end quote. Colangelo pivots to the Trump Tower meeting with Trump, Cohen, and David Pecker, the CEO of AMI, the parent company of the National Enquirer. Continued, Pecker, as he's known, would act as the eyes and ears of the campaign to gather info that might be harmful to Trump's candidacy. AMI, the parent company of the National Enquirer, would also use its publications and magazines to publish stories flattering to Trump. Quote, the National Enquirer ran headline after headline that extolled the defendant's virtues, end quote. It says ones that Pecker specifically instructed. And then another one, the National Enquirer also ran stories attacking Mr. Trump's political opponents, including Ben Carson and something I cut off here because, you know, I'm only human. Again, I'm sharing with you some of Gotta Laugh's Mastodon thread. Massive. She's been all over the pretrial proceedings and everything else. All right, then back to it. Another one from Klasfeld. Colangelo describes the conspiracy with AMI as having three parts. One, to run positive coverage. Two, to attack opponents. Three, be, quote, eyes and ears of the campaign. He says that that last prong of the conspiracy falls under the rubric of, quote, catch and kill. Now, those of you who haven't been paying attention, catch and kill is a practice that Mr. Pecker and his publications engaged in regularly. They would, as in the case of both Stormy Daniels and what's her name, Karen McDougal, these women were coming forward to say, hey, you know what? I've got a story to tell. And they would pay for the story, allegedly, saying it's going to run in the National Enquirer, and then they would shelve it. Basically, they pay for it and then hold it back. They kill it in journalistic lingo, catch and kill. All right, now she's quoting Laffey and her toot thread, Anna Bauer, who writes, Colangelo on alleged conspiracy. Soon after Trump announced his run for president, he asked David Pecker, the CEO of AMI, the parent company of the National Enquirer, to meet with him. Also at the meeting was attorney Michael Cohen. Cohen, Pecker, and Trump struck an agreement, in quotes, at that meeting, the prosecution says. They agreed that Pecker would help campaign by acting as the eyes and ears of the Trump campaign to gather info harmful to Trump, which would then be reported to Cohen. Then the prosecutor went on to describe three catch and kill operations. The first payoff, we heard about this one. The first payoff went to Dino Sajudin, I'm probably saying his name wrong, who had been hawking a false story that Trump fathered a child out of wedlock. Remember, he was a doorman, I think, at Trump Tower. Anyway, Pecker was acting in that scheme, had been acting as a co-conspirator, Colangelo, the prosecutor said. When AMI determined later that these allegations weren't even true, Cohen instructed Pecker to delay releasing him from the nondisclosure agreement until after the 2016 election. That's the first one. Next up, Karen McDougal. Ms. McDougal said that she had a romantic and sexual relationship with Trump while he was married that lasted for roughly a year. Quote, the evidence will show that the defendant desperately did not want this information about Karen McDougal to become public because he was concerned about how it would affect the election, according to the prosecutor. Colangelo continues, the evidence will show that the defendant desperately did not want this information about Karen McDougal to become public because he was concerned. Sorry, she's going back and forth between different tweeters and tutors. So here we go. Then the prosecutor says, you will see the flurry of text messages, the barrage of phone calls, end quote, about the desire to silence Karen McDougal's story. David Pecker is reportedly, this was again early this morning, set to be the first witness, and the prosecutor promises the jury that they will hear him testify. So right now they're still recounting the prosecutor's open statement. There's a number of people live tooting, tweeting, and otherwise, you know, giving live updates on what's going on since we don't have cameras or recorders in the courtroom. Then this other site says, the prosecutor says, Howard, what's his name? Somebody Howard, who was like the editor, I think, of the National Enquirer, told Cohen he thought the allegations were true. They all discussed it. Pecker agreed AMI would pay $150,000 for the story. AMI added other terms. Ms. McDougal would appear on the cover, but it was hush money. All right, so then the prosecutor goes on to say, you will hear David Pecker testify about his conversations with Donald Trump about McDougal. But Trump didn't pay, and Pecker was frustrated. Cohen recorded a conversation with Donald Trump. You will hear it, he says. Cohen spoke with Alan Weisselberg. You remember Weisselberg. Weisselberg is the Trump Organization's CFO, chief financial officer, who's now in his second stint at Rikers, this time because it was determined that he committed perjury. Oh, what a tangled web they weave. Colangelo then goes on to say, you will hear the defendant's own voice on tape working out the intended agreement. Then, according to Adam Klasfeld, Colangelo pivots to Trump's hot mic moment in the Access Hollywood tape. Hope Hicks was sent a transcript of the tape, he says. Ooh. Then this press account tweets, prosecutor, you will hear the defendant say in his own voice that they should pay in cash. Instead, they paid his so-called advisory services. Pecker consulted with AMI's general counsel, then said AMI would eat the cost. A month before the election, the Washington Post published a video that turned the campaign upside down on a hot mic on Access Hollywood. The Washington Post reporter emailed Hope Hicks with a transcript of Donald Trump bragging about sexual assaults. Orton on the above, as he said that, Trump, not looking at Colangelo, shook his head. Apparently, there was a lot of head shaking today of the former guy. Colangelo takes out the transcript himself, reciting the infamous lines with even prosecutorial delivery. You can do anything. Grab him by the pussy. You can do anything. End quote. They knew it was damaging not only because Trump bragged about sexual assault, but because it was on tape. And then Colangelo said, again, the prosecutor, this is all covering his opening statements. The campaign went into immediate damage control mode to blunt the impact of the tape. Trump called it locker room talk, depicting it as words, not actions. Then, one day after the Access Hollywood tape was released, the campaign caught wind of Stormy Daniels allegations. And then it goes back and forth, again, quoting this press account. Prosecutor, Trump said, grab him by the pussy, you can do anything. Allies withdrew their endorsements. The Republican National Committee considered replacing him a month before Election Day. At the defense table, Trump whispers to his lawyer, Blanche. Wonder what he was whispering. One day after the Access Hollywood tape was published, AMI told Michael Cohen that Stormy Daniels' lawyer, Keith Davidson, had another story about sexual infidelity with a porn star. At Trump's direction, Cohen arranged to buy the story. At this point, Orton, I guess, is another person who's tweeting or tooting or something. He writes, Trump pointed to something near Blanche. Then Blanche handed him a post-it note. The two then whispered briefly. And then Klasfeld reports, the prosecutor and Daniels' hush money payoff. Trump didn't want to write a check himself. to write a $130,000 check himself. So they figured that Cohen would make the payment, quote, through a shell company to make it harder to track. Quote, it was election fraud, pure and simple, end quote. And then he said, we'll never know, and it doesn't matter if it changed the outcome. It goes on like this. There's more. And they continued. They did the defense, you know, opening statement, too. I guess the prosecution went about 40, 45 minutes. The defense attorneys went about 30 minutes or so. And then, as I told you before, it looked like they were going to, you know, break for the day because they were going to break early. But no, instead, they did call the appropriately named David Pecker to the stand, who started his testimony, so that, again, the jury tonight in their long day until they come back in tomorrow has something to ruminate on. All right, we'll get back to that. So here's what I'm thinking. So I keep checking that court website, and the transcript's not posted yet. What they said is it will be posted, the full transcript of each day's proceedings, by the end of business the following day, which is just going to make it even more confusing, but there will be some juicy stuff there. And when there is, we will do some dramatic reenactments. Because, you know, when you don't have video, you do the next best thing. All right. So if you would like to participate and take on a role, send me an email, Nicole@NicoleSandler.com, and we'll figure out the role playing, because it could be really fun. It could be really bad, but, you know, you never know till you try, right? Right. Okay. Well, with that, you know what time it is, right?
It's time for the fucking news from NicoleSandler.com.
And Jonathan Larson at thefuckingnews.substack.com.
He said a very bad word.
Oh, the language on you.
You're a fucking newsman.
The fucking news.
Jonathan Larson, the man behind thefuckingnews.substack.com. That's where you go to subscribe to the fucking news. And again, let me just tell you something. The news, for the most part, is really depressing. What Jonathan does, and I know, Jonathan, I know you have a little bit of trepidation about this. It's a weird noise. But the snark, the sense of humor with which you write the news makes it so much more palatable. Because if you just have to read about this crap straight, it's really depressing. Yes. So at least you take, you know, how does the song go? A spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. So yes. You add a little bit of humor. That's why Jon Stewart's Daily Show was always worked, because with humor, people will listen to the news more than they do without the humor.
I think that's true. And thank you for the kind words. What I wrestle with is a couple of things. One is, and as you know, I worked at The Daily Show with Jon Stewart very briefly, long time ago. And I'm not sure that it, like, made things better, if you know what I mean. Like, I don't know. I don't know that comedy in our current culture has achieved good things.
But that's not the reason for the news. The news isn't there to reassure you or make you feel better about what's going on in the world. It's there to inform you. Yes. And I know certainly with young people, the way to get them to listen and absorb it is, well, with anything, is to make it entertaining. You know, that's where they screwed up Air America. So radio, and take it from someone who's worked her whole life in radio, it's supposed to be entertaining first. You need to keep people listening and engaged. And so if you make it entertaining, that's your goal. This is the entertainment industry. The next goal is, yes, to inform, but you got to make them stick around. And this is how commercial broadcasting works, between the commercials. Because the content, honestly, the way the suits look at it, the only reason the content is there is to fill the time between the commercials. That's all they care about, is selling those commercials.
Yeah.
So you need to keep them engaged so they'll stick around through the content break until the commercial break. Now, I don't give a shit about that. There's a reason I don't run advertising here. I hope I make it entertaining, but I hope we also impart a lot of information that when you make it entertaining, it sticks.
So I feel like in an age where, and this is going to insult everyone in the world, where audiences are not as good as they used to be. And what I mean by that is we collectively, we respond much more to just like our base instincts. What do I want to pay attention to? Is this going to make me feel good right now? You know? And so the line I try to walk is try to make it entertaining and engaging and uplifting, right? In a sense of like, we're all in this together, without it being, without it playing to bad instincts, tribalism.
Sorry. I got to fix it. You're echoing. I got to figure out where your echo's coming from. Don't mind me.
Okay. Should I keep
talking? No, just keep talking. Yeah. Keep talking.
Well, and you know, there's a lot of comedy is mean. and it's also, some of it is mean in ways that sort of endorse divisive concepts, right? It's very easy to make fun of Trump for how he looks, but I don't want to endorse the idea of, you know, mocking people for what they look like, period, you know?
But it's not about what they look like. We're not talking about what they look like, unless it's like Rudy Giuliani with a dye dripping down his face. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure there are examples out there of people making fun of what Trump looks like.
Oh, well, okay. Well, Trump, you know, look, it lends itself. The man is orange. He looks ridiculous. And it's not a natural thing. It's what, look, I try not to comment on people's weight unless you're Donald Trump and you have your doctor say that you weigh 235 pounds. Donald, if Donald Trump weighs 235 pounds, I weigh 98.
Sure.
So that, I think, is fair game.
I have no problem, you know, going after the obvious disconnect between claims and reality. And I'm not saying you do this, but we all do this, right? We all, I mean, part of it is the internet age that we live in. We all grow up knowing we can safely say things to each other, right? Mm-hmm. And what the internet did was it erased that line. So now the things that we safely said to each other, they just get sent out into to everyone.
Right. There are things that you will say in the privacy of a confidential conversation that you wouldn't say publicly. Come on, we all do it. The question is knowing when to do it. But I'll tell you something. The person guilty of, I think, this sea change in this mindset is Donald Trump. One of the reasons that his followers like him is he'll say exactly what he thinks because he's got no filter, and he makes it okay for those people to embrace their inner racist.
Right. And I think that's why it's all the more important to model what a filter looks like and sort of remind folks, like, this is how we do it. This is how we engage in discourse, even if we're trying to be fun and engaging and all of that. And my God, do I sound like a self-righteous scold right now.
But
everyone's,
you know what?
Out there going, but you, unsubscribe.
No, don't unsubscribe. But see, you do. I don't take your stuff as mean. I take it as snarky and funny. And it, if I can get a chuckle out of something, look, this is my wonderment at people who are great political comedians. Someone like John Fugelsang. He used to do my show every week. And what I would always marvel at is his ability to make me laugh at something that is inherently not funny.
Right.
And that's a talent, you know, and with so much unfunniness in the world, we need those laughs or, you know, we go crazy.
Yeah.
Which I have. So, you know.
Not enough fucking news.
No, but you know, look, when Donald Trump got elected, it was so inconceivable that I mean, I really had a hard time dealing with it. And having to cover the news, which was presented in just a nonstop, it's like, how much shit can you throw against the wall and see what sticks? That's how he does everything. No matter which way you looked and no matter how much of it you're covering, there was more. It was overwhelming, and it was overwhelmingly horrific. And it took a toll. I fell into a really deep depression. I've always battled with depression, but it got me bad for like the first couple of years. It was not, you know, it took a lot to pull me out of that. And so I seek out the humor and I seek out the music to clear my head. So I think doing public service.
It was a crazy making event. It was like having the sun come up in the morning in the shape of a cube, and everyone like saying, okay, well, onto our the traffic report, that's weather, onto the traffic. Like, how are you supposed to proceed in a world that's pretending that that the Earth didn't just stop in its orbit and we're not all going to fly off into space?
Yes. And then on top of that, we got COVID. Like, with this moron in charge who's telling us to ingest and inject bleach or UV light into our bodies. It's like, what the fuck? We are in opposite world. We are living, none of this makes sense. You've heard my opposite world stuff, right? Opposite world is my...
Everything you thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
When nothing makes sense. You don't have anything to glom onto and say, okay, this is my pillar. This will center me. Everything was haywire. So,
well, that's one thing I do try to address is sort of like, how do we make sense of X, Y, and Z? And sometimes that means like historical context. And sometimes it's like evolutionary psychology, right? Like, we are wired to think today is the worst day ever,
right?
And yesterday was the best day ever, right? And we're wired to think that way. And so that can make it really hard to avoid the conclusion that things are getting worse, right? And that makes us feel crazy when nothing's being fixed, so on and so forth. It makes it very hard to acknowledge, oh, that's a thing that's better. So I try to like make those dynamics apparent and explicit so that people can sort of grapple with them intellectually in a way that hopefully has some trickle-down emotional benefits.
You know, in today, and sometimes, Jonathan, you may misstate something, but I appreciate the effort. Like today, you say, Trump hush money trial to rebrand as Trump voter deceiving trial. It's more than a hush money trial. This is the point that I've been trying to make, is news people are calling it the hush money trial, but that downplays the severity of the fact that he committed a crime.
Right.
So, you know, but I...
Yeah,
but
that's what I talked about this morning.
Right.
Hush money is legal.
Yes.
And there are lots of circumstances where you're allowed to pay hush money, catch and kill, right?
Right.
What the Inquirer did. You can, if someone wants to take money for not saying something, I mean, it's called an NDA, right?
And Trump employs them with everybody who's ever worked for him.
Lots
but in
of
this
big
case,
companies use them.
It was meant to deceive voters in the election. Right. It had an impact on the election, and that's...
And the crime wasn't even the payments. The crime was how they accounted for them fraudulently, falsely in their business records. So the hush money is,
incidental.
It's entirely tangential.
Right. It was the mechanism, but that mechanism itself wasn't against the law, where, you know, if you're buying drugs from someone, you give them money, they give you drugs. That act in itself is illegal. So anyway, we're trying to rebrand it there because there are people like Jonathan Turley out there saying there's no reason they even brought this in the first place. Well, yeah, there is, because the guy broke the law. And why should he be able to break the law every time he turns around and not be prosecuted for it? Because it wasn't serious enough? No, sorry. When you're fucking with an election, it's serious.
And by the way, I would suggest that, call me crazy, we ought to hold people in these positions to a higher standard, which means that, we should prosecute, even if we wouldn't prosecute in cases where, you know, the local dog catcher candidate falsified business records, right?
Yes.
Maybe that person who doesn't have all kinds of track record, right, of escaping consequences, legal consequences for their actions, maybe that person, you know, they will let them slide.
Yes. Now, so Jonathan Larson covers the news that, you know, we are getting elsewhere, but he does a lot of original reporting too. So yesterday, this weekend, go figure, the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, went against Marge, who's now widely known as Moscow Marge, and her sycophants, Massey, and now Paul Gosar has joined her little group to try to oust him, to vacate the chair, because He wants to do funding for Ukraine. I mean,
he already passed it. Yeah.
But it passed yesterday. So, but now Marge is even more livid. How dare you? She said something to the effect of, I don't even know what country we're in anymore. Why are we paying to support Ukraine? Marge, go to school. Leave Congress. Go get an education. Read a real newspaper. Learn something. But you wrote about where we got to this, how we got to this, because Mike Johnson, he's in many cases as bad as Marge. He was one of the brains behind January 6th and the fake elector scheme, and he helped facilitate that insurrection. But so last night, it's like 7 o'clock on a Sunday night, and in my
time,
o'clock Pacific time, into my email box pops Johnson's come to Jesus moment came the same day the family came to him. So
I feel like you were looking for a dun dun dun.
No, it was a scary. Well, it was, but it was da 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 da. I have another one somewhere, but that's the best scary one I have. I could have done this one, but it wasn't really fitting for that. So anyway, so tell us. So he had a visit from some family members, not his family members.
Right. So if folks remember when I was on last week, I talked about this Ukrainian guy who's the point man for the family, which is the group behind the National Prayer Breakfast. He's their point man in Ukraine. He's anti-LGBTQ, anti-reproductive rights, and he's a member of the European Christian Political Movement, and he uses prayer breakfasts as a networking device for right-wingers, and also as a device to sort of bring people on the left a little bit less on the left. And what I reported was that on April 10th, I reported and discussed last week that this guy, Ongurian, had met with both Mike Johnson back in February and then at the beginning of this month with Volodymyr Zelensky, and that they were pushing a new narrative that religious freedom was a reason, a new reason, an emerging reason to support Ukraine. Why? Because Russia is genuinely, legitimately killing members of the clergy, destroying churches, targeting people of the Christian faith who are not part of the Orthodox Church, which is aligned with Russia. Mm-hmm. So it's real. The religious persecution is a real thing. The reason this is reportable, one is because obviously this is a massive story, so we want to understand all the factors here. But also, when Ongurian wasn't talking to mainstream press, right? He was quoted in a press release by Marcy Kaptur, the Democratic congresswoman from Ohio, as talking about, we want to connect with our brothers and sisters in the Democratic world. But meanwhile, when he was talking to evangelical press, he was talking about how Mike Johnson is his brother in Christ. So he was using very theocratic language. And what he said to an audience in Texas was, if you help us now, evangelicals, you get an opportunity to shape Ukraine in the future. And we know what he means by that. He means pro-life, quote-unquote, pro-family, quote-unquote. So what we still didn't have was exactly how Mike Johnson went from praying over Ukraine on Tuesday night last week, which is what CNN reported, that Johnson didn't know what to do on Tuesday night, so he was praying over it, to Wednesday, when he gave that amazing press conference where he came out and said, I'm paraphrasing, obviously, If supporting Ukraine cost me my job, so be it. This is the right thing to do. What we didn't know was what changed between then and now. Well, it turns out that Ongurian had a meeting with Johnson earlier that day on Wednesday. And we know this because he told this to CBN, Christian Broadcasting Network. Mm-hmm. So what happened at that meeting was that Ongurian brought a Ukrainian man to the meeting to meet with Johnson. That Ukrainian man was an evangelical Baptist whose wife, the daughter of a pastor, and whose four-month-old son were both killed by a Russian drone in March. And according to a number of accounts from people who are in this world, there's a GOP operative who's running an operation in Ukraine, distributing humanitarian aid, things like that. According to them, this meeting tipped Johnson and the party into supporting Ukraine.
Oh my God. Is this what this photo was from that you put in your
That's an earlier one. That one is from, that's Ngurion on viewer's left, and with the white, with the red, sort of striped thingy down his center. He's meeting with Lindsey Graham, Richard Blumenthal, and a guy named Carl Algren, who's a top official in, if I remember the name correctly, the Ukrainian Freedom Project, I believe it is, which is run by a guy named Stephen Moore.
Oh, God.
Who's a former chief of staff.
On like CNN all the time, because there was a Stephen Moore who was like, I think he was on CNN. He was a Trumper. He was horrible.
I don't think it's the same guy.
Okay.
But this guy was the chief of staff to Peter Roskam, who was the chief deputy whip at the time. So, and who seems, by the way, to be doing good work in Ukraine. He posted that not only that the evangelical message seemed to have tipped Johnson and the party, but also writing, quote, Pavlo is the hero. And so the issue here then is, what are the implications of that for Ukraine? If that message got to Johnson and that message is now basically responsible for, 61 billion dollars in aid, what does Zelensky have to do in return for that money and in return for not being, spending the rest of his life in Russian prison? Well, on Friday, I believe it was, Ngurion spoke last week to both CBN, Christian Broadcasting Network, and to Tony Perkins at the Family Research Council.
Okay.
And he told CBN that he talked about the meeting with Johnson, and he said that the goal was to unite in a spiritual battle and create an army of Jesus. And he told Tony Perkins that the idea is that Ukraine is sufficiently conservative and sufficiently evangelical, even though, by the way, it's only 2% evangelical in the country. But Ngurion's conceit here is that the future Ukraine, if America saves it, will be, quote, the Bible Belt of liberal Europe. So that's what the evangelicals who made this happen think they're getting in return.
And
part of the reason I think this is worth discussing is there's no indication that Democrats are aware of the shadow diplomacy that's gone on here. And, they have no copies of whatever receipts may have changed hands. And we do know that at the meeting that Zelensky had with Ngurion and others at the beginning of the month, those religious leaders, presumably including Ngurion, had one ask of Zelensky, according to a press release that the president's office put out. That one ask was, can you start doing prayer breakfasts again?
Oh, my God.
And Zelensky said yes.
Oh, God.
And so you have to ask, why does this matter? If they could have asked for money to rebuild churches. They could have asked for additional protective services for members of the clergy. They love waffles.
Prayer.
And so they want their prayer breakfast back. And the reason they can hold a prayer breakfast if they want to. No one's stopping you except, bombs and drones. But you can go ahead and do it. What they want is the official government involvement. They want Zelensky's involvement because that's how they get people of power to come to these events and to buy into these events as legitimate and authoritative.
So you're saying Jonathan Larson is with us of the fucking news. Substack.com. That's where you get his original reporting and his snark. The delivered to your mailbox, your inbox every morning, sometimes the night before. But anyway, the you're saying the Democrats, many of them, don't know what kind of deal Johnson made to get him from there to here. But meanwhile, some of them are saying, yes, I will support Johnson against Marge's move to have him removed, to vacate the chair, because, good faith. But if he's doing this stuff, they should just vote for Hakeem Jeffries for speaker.
If they get a Republican vote, sure. I should be clear. I have no indication that any kind of deal was struck with Johnson. I suspect that. I think it's hard sometimes for people on the left to grapple with this stuff, assuming that the religious faith of the people we're talking about is genuine. But I think it probably is in Johnson's case.
In Johnson's case, for sure.
Yeah, And so I think it's, you know, according to the reports, he hugged this Ukrainian Baptist who had lost his wife and son and prayed with him. Like, this sounds like it was a genuinely moving human moment. So I don't think there's a reason to think that, first of all, Johnson would have happily said, yeah, of
course. He's a true believer. He'll go overboard to embrace the religious zealots.
Right. Yeah. Right. So there was nothing they really, you know, that he needed to extract or anything like that. So, but it's more that what you've got now is, and what the other thing I talked about was, there was actually a campaign like digital ads, Instagram and Facebook pressuring Johnson on religious terms. This is the Stephen Moore I was talking about, his Ukrainian Freedom Project. I'm sure I'm botching the name now, but they paid for the ads starting actually end of last year. And then in March started targeting Johnson by name, not in a mean critical way, but like, hey, can you give us a hand here? We're dying, Mr. Speaker, with all due respect, help us not be dying. And so, you know, it's quite likely that a lot of people responded to those ads and they reached out to Lindsey Graham or Johnson or whoever. And there is now an evangelical constituency. Newsmax, by the way, has also put Hungarian on the air in the headlines. This is a guy who's better well known on the religious right, certainly, than he is to mainstream news audiences. So there's now an expectation of what future Ukraine looks like, and that creates its own political momentum and sets a bar for American politicians, which Zelensky, you know, is going to want to at least be aware of, if not respectful of. So,
Well, the bottom line is, so this got done, the funding got done. Do we know what Marge and her, you know, minions have in store? Are they good? Or the house is now on recess for another week or two, right? Because it's.
I think they've been neutered. I mean, it seems pretty clear that Democrats, enough Democrats, will make up that gap.
Wow.
I mean, that's my assumption. I've got no inside knowledge there. Or anything,
I saw somebody on the left, I can't remember who it was, say yes, he would vote to, I think it was Ro Khanna for some reason, say yes, he would vote to save Mike Johnson's job. But then I saw Jasmine Crockett, who I love. I'm more impressed with her every time I hear her speak. She's like, I'm not going to reward mediocrity. I'm not going to reward somebody, you know, just because he's doing what he's supposed to do. She's like, I will not vote to save his job. But so
I 100% agree with that. The only question I think is, if you don't look at it as reward, but just look at it from the cold hard facts of what happens if we're without a speaker again, is that a worse or better outcome than if you keep Johnson in office for now?
Well,
that to me is all it comes down to. Which is better, which is worse?
Right.
Not does someone get a gold star that they don't deserve? Like, who cares?
I get it. But, you know, there's a chance to flip it. And with Gallagher leaving,
not yet.
Well, if they don't have a majority, if it's tied, you know, 50-50 in the House, or 50%, it could conceivably happen. But, you know, I love making them show their stupidity and ineptitude. And they're already so dysfunctional. I think this vote this weekend was like the first thing they've actually accomplished, like doing something rather than shutting everything down.
I mean, it was a flagrant violation of the Hastert rule, which is an amazing achievement. Like the Hastert rule, if you know better than I do, whether your listeners know what the Hastert rule is.
They should know. It's been a while, but don't bring a vote unless you have enough. You've got the votes in your party. You don't go to the other side to win, right?
If your majority of your party doesn't support it, then too bad.
Right.
And that's not what happened here. And Johnson's willingness to do that breaks a precedent going back something like 20 years now.
But then again, they may want to rethink the name of the rule, because since Denny Hastert was ousted from his role as Speaker of the House, I think the longest serving, certainly Republican Speaker of the House in history, we learned that he was a pedophile and he was stripping little boys. Come on, man.
Come on, man.
So maybe change the name of the rule.
Maybe just ditch the rule entirely. Right. I mean, yeah. It's supposed to be a democracy, not That's a right. democracy or That's whatever right. not a the hell majority majoritarian. Yeah, exactly. So I think that there's something to be said for the argument that if Johnson is willing to bring things to a vote when a clear majority of the House supports it, that's not the worst speaker right. to have.
Exactly. No, it isn't. Although you got to question his motivations for certain things like this. It may not say in the Constitution the exact words, wall between church and state, but it is there. Unless you're like them and you choose to ignore it and say it doesn't
sure,
exist.
Sure, sure. I mean, Johnson clearly embraces some absolutely fundamentally un-American and anti-democratic yep. ideals. But if allowing majority rule in the House is one of the ideals he embraces,
that's a good
then,
thing.
Then the bad ideals he embraces, we have to worry about a lot less.
Can I suggest one thing? Make him put that into effect. Let's say majority rule in the House. Yes. How about he who gets the most or she who gets the most votes wins? Let's get rid of the Electoral College, please.
Look, that was the big Republican revolt against McCarthy, right? They wanted a return to regular order. They wanted, and by the way, I thought a lot of these were valuable, principled things that they wanted in terms of how the House operates. They wanted legislation released in advance
right,
so that everyone could have a chance to see it. They wanted legislation, especially allocation bills, broken up by committee the way they're supposed to be and debated in committee, right? Committees are supposed to do this work. Yep. Then we learn about the bill. There's time for the public to weigh in on the bill. That part stinks. Love this part. Get it out. Whatever, right? The process, that's what they were fighting for. The Hastert rule is contrary and hostile
right.
to all of the principles involved in regular right. order. So it would be a totally natural, perfect evolution of that stated Freedom Caucus regular order agenda to ditch the Hastert rule as well.
Right. Works for me.
Yeah.
I guess not for Marge.
I have no indication. I have no reason to believe that that's actually what's going to happen. But the precedent has been set now and Johnson's been willing to ditch it. And I suspect, at least in the short term, he's going to survive any speaker challenges.
And he will with Democratic votes. So and as it should be, because Marge needs to go home. I don't know if home is Georgia or Moscow anymore, but wherever. She just needs to go. All right, that's my two cents for today. With that, we've gone blown past the end of the hour. Jonathan Larson writes the fucking news for you every fucking day. So the least you could do is fucking subscribe. There is a free option, but if you can afford it, you should support his work as you should mine, because those of us who do this work without a paywall do it for the right reasons. And so, yeah, you know what? If you can't afford it, please, you know, don't sweat it. But if you can, support the people whose work you depend on to be informed. With that, Jonathan Larson, thank you as always.
Thank you, Nicole.
Tomorrow, I'm not sure what we're doing tomorrow. Lisa Graves will be here on Wednesday. Tomorrow, we'll see if we get any of the transcript. Maybe we'll do our first dramatic reading. I don't know. We'll figure something out. Thank you, Jonathan. Talk to you next week. And you guys, I'll see you tomorrow. Stay safe. Stay here. I'll say stay cool. We are in the 90s already. Summer has come to Arizona. It's hot. The pool has hit 80 degrees. That means I guess I need to start getting in there.
Stay cool.
Yeah, we'll do. Talk to you next week. Thanks, everybody. You guys, see you tomorrow. Peace out.